Hello and welcome. You're listening to Epic Podcast, Emergency Preparedness in Canada. My name is Grayson, and this special Emergency Preparedness Week episode is entitled simply Be Prepared, an EP Week Primer for Emergency Managers. In this episode, we'll be discussing what we think emergency managers need to be aware of for EP Week 2024 and beyond. We'll cover recent changes in BC emergency management legislation with Tarina College, new developments in academia with Simon Wells, recap some interesting conferences from 2023, as well as provide a must-attend list of upcoming conferences and training opportunities for 2024. All this and more on this episode of Epic Podcast, Current, Relevant, Canadian. Well, somehow, and seemingly impossibly soon, it's that time of year again, Emergency Preparedness Week 2024. If you're like us here at Epic, 2024 has been a blur so far, with a laser focus on wildfire, drought, and flood preparedness for the upcoming hazard season, which is forecasted to be a rough one in most areas. So much so that you may have noticed it's been a while since our last podcast, for which I sincerely apologize. Part of the reason for this was scheduling, but another piece of this was actually a very small-scale business continuity lesson for Epic, which you might be interested in. It turns out that the web-based audio editing software we were using changed some settings, resulting in information potentially being shared with Russia. This meant that it was deemed unsafe to use on my computer, which I use for work, which meant that I couldn't edit podcasts anymore. Although I quickly found a different software solution, what I hadn't counted on was the learning curve associated with figuring out new tools, and that, combined with a busy schedule, resulted in a gap in podcast production. So there you go, lesson learned. Don't just identify backup solutions. Remember to factor in the training time also into your recovery time objectives. But we're back now, and we thought since so much of EP Week is focused on preparing the public, we'd spend some time doing our part to prepare emergency managers of what's new and what's coming up for the profession. So let's start with what's new. One of the big changes in 2023 were some changes to BC emergency management legislation, which will undoubtedly have ripple effects across the country. To bring us up to speed, I would like to play for you an interview recorded in December 2023 with Tarina College, Manager of Emergency Management for Fraser Valley Regional District and Board Director for the BC Association of Emergency Managers.
Thank you. Newly this year, the province enacted its new legislation for emergency management. We've moved from the Emergency Program Act, which had been in place since 1993, into what is now called the Emergency and Disaster Management Act, and that's been live since November 8th this year. It's a pretty fundamental shift in the emergency management landscape in British Columbia. The outgoing legislation had a heavy response focus, and the new legislation has a very thorough disaster risk reduction focus. And so that opens the door to many questions and leaves a lot of space to see growth across many landscapes which contribute to emergency management, not only legislation, but policy and eventually through operations. It also leaves a lot of openness and questions right now because there's so many components to that legislation and how to operationalize it that are still unknown because the regulations are yet to be developed to support the new legislation. And so the legislation has components that also ensure that the old regulations can remain current until they are succeeded.
And this is really interesting because although every province is responsible for its own emergency management and has some kind of quirks and differences in its emergency management legislation, what I think is fair to say is that it historically has all been fairly response-centric. And what you get out of the EM legislation is, sure, some rules and responsibilities and titles and that sort of thing, but mostly it's that ability to declare a state of local emergency and enact some extraordinary powers. Is that changing?
Yes, but we're not sure how yet. And, you know, we can see that the legislation has been written in what many are saying is very prescriptive and what others are saying is very permissive. So it depends on which lens you want to throw on the legislation. The word prescribed is in there nearly 100 times, and the things that will be prescribed through regulation. And we can't know what we don't know yet about those regulations. However, there is an open opportunity for British Columbians to provide feedback and recommendations into the regulatory development. Essentially, read, review, critique the current regulations, and opine on what thoughts you have about the ways of the future. And so we will know more as we learn more. And it's just an ever-changing landscape, shifting us further away from response focus.
You as an emergency manager and as a spokesperson for emergency managers, what should we be keeping an eye on in that legislation? What are some of the risk areas or the opportunity areas that you see?
There's two key undertones to this legislation that are super exciting. And as anyone in the field of practice would understand, United Nations Disaster Risk Reduction Sendai framework focus is at the core of this legislation. Even though it doesn't specifically allude to Sendai framework, you can feel the undertone of it. And I think we can all stand behind that morally, ethically, and otherwise. The second one is the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People and the new BC Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples Act. So this is the first legislation in British Columbia to be co-developed with a First Nations input. That means that a body of legislation that doesn't regulate or legislate First Nations has been written to ensure that they're fairly represented in the legislation among those who are regulated and legislated by the legislation. So that's an intriguing shift in our legal landscape, generally speaking, and it demonstrates the province's commitment to collaborative reconciliatory processes with First Nations and Indigenous populations.
Where do you think there are some risk areas, or where do you think it maybe hasn't gone far enough or too far?
There's a lot of unknowns still to be unfolded. And as we consider the importance of Indigenous collaboration, we also have to recognize the systemic aspects of colonialism. And there's components that are very thoughtful if you are one jurisdiction who needs to consult and collaborate with a small body of Indigenous governing bodies. However, if you are something like the Fraser Valley Regional District, there are 30 different First Nations Indigenous governing bodies in our shared land space that have 146 bands. And there are requirements also to engage, collaborate, consult, and cooperate with Indigenous governing bodies who have traditional interests within the area that we govern as well. And so you could throw on any regional district hat, and we're going to have a very similar build of First Nations that have right and title over lands long before we came and occupied this space. And so what it does leave is a lot of questions about which organization is the primary one to which we would consult with. What happens if there are competing interests over a land space? Who has the appropriate authority to opine on consultation if there were engagement considerations that are different between hereditary chief and council and elected chief and council? There's just a lot of question that's yet to be known. And so a component of the act also establishes reasonability to create collaboration agreements with Indigenous governing bodies. There's not a lot of information yet on what a collaboration agreement would contain. And so even as I unpack simple considerations among the landscape that I'm responsible for, I think about the importance of what may come when making decisions about a state of local emergency on, say, a private property parcel or fee simple property that maybe is owned by a First Nation, but that parcel is immediately adjacent to their reserve boundaries, but not actually part of their reserve. It makes many ways of sense to clarify those confusing parameters. However, if it's solely through the lens of emergency management and not a government-to-government established relationship, then we could be applying a different level of expectation of relationship under emergency management that isn't the same perspective equally applied across land use, building and development, bylaw enforcement, and other responsibilities that we have in local government over those lands. So there's so much that this legislation can affect and still so many questions about how it relates to other suites of legislation.
What about the actual process of renewing legislation? I think it's fair to say other provinces are not far behind in maybe making some changes. What did you find useful about the process in which emergency managers were engaged? What advice would you give to emergency managers in other provinces when it comes time to modernize their EM legislation?
I would share that representative or select consultation isn't necessarily consultation through the eyes of those who are excluded. And I was privileged wearing my day job organizational hat to participate in a 3-year-long policy advisory committee with the UBCM, Union of BC Municipalities group and the province. And I was one of two practitioners who were fortunate to participate in that. Of course, municipal type committees on a municipal representative organization would very often be CAOs and elected officials who may not have the subject matter knowledge of the people who do the job, the people who've gone through the lived experiences or their training. And so you need a really well-rounded body that can represent the highest level municipal interests. You need a little bit of an understanding about the responder aspects, because no matter what we do, we can move fully into a disaster risk reduction realm, but we're always going to have responses. And it's really important to understand that the further we move away from operations, the more important it is to ensure that the operators who do the groundworks, the tactical operators themselves, have an intricate component to the development of legislation. The province has done some full-scale outreach. Many bodies were engaged through the development of this legislation, but there's still many questions among those who are tactical operators. At the end of the day, we in emergency management build the frameworks for the before, during, and after. We build the preparatory framework to reduce the confusion and chaos in response. And we build the recovery phase aimed at reducing disaster risk again to the similar hazard or to a similar hazard of a similar scope and scale. But it does still all dance around response, whether we intentionally move away from that or not. And when we cut our responders out of the engagement process and we fruitfully fail to understand the importance of response, the reason that operations works and that response works effectively is because it is so integrated. It's not clear under this legislation how the response framework will outflow, whether there will be a regulation that clarifies that, whether that's going to be left to policies, procedures, processes, forms, tools, and templates. We're not sure yet. So there are bodies that do operational works that are curious at this point in time.
Beyond keeping up with and occasionally trying to influence legislation, a big part of staying prepared as emergency management professionals is keeping current with academia. To help us accomplish that, we have Simon Wells, principal for the Canadian Journal of Emergency Management and recent recipient of the CRH Volunteer Award, who was kind enough to highlight some important journals and studies in an interview recorded in December 2023.
Well, thanks for having me, Grayson. I really appreciate it. There's a couple things that really caught my eye in our journal, and there's also a new journal that's emerged this year that we're very excited about as well. Of course, there's also a trade publication called Avert, which we're big fans of. But we wanted to point out Dr. Jeff Donaldson's Journal of Preparedness in Canada, which is a production of Preparedness Labs Incorporated. And we were very excited to see Volume 1, Issue 1 get released this year. And I'm really excited to see more of the high quality content produced in future volumes and issues. In our own journal, there's a couple articles that really caught my interest, and they were both in Volume 3, Issue 1 of the Canadian Journal of Emergency Management. The first was about nature-triggered disasters and the involvement of armed forces. And that's an article by Ahmed, Haq, Agrawal, and Saqib. And I think it's very timely because they were a few months ahead of the Government of Canada and the Chief of Defence Staff in asking the question of what really is the policy and the utility for the use of combative forces in fighting or responding to natural disasters? And is that the best use of combatant forces? So that was a very interesting article to read and a very prescient one. And the second one that caught my eye is about emergency planning zones around major technological accident sites or potential sites. And that is by Dubot, Clément, Tsingakis, and Vollet. And they really laid out some very, very technical guidance for how to plan for emergency planning zones around potential chemical or other types of accidents.
Yeah, that first one you mentioned, I think that is quite timely. We've heard a lot of talk at the federal level of potentially some kind of federal emergency response agency. And I think it is recognizing that the quote unquote temporary or one-off resources that we sometimes tap in disaster are no longer temporary or one-off. And are they really the right resource for the job?
And I find that conversation is heartening, but at the same time, I don't know if there's an appreciation in the government of Canada for how much work would be involved in actually launching an effective federal agency. I mean, the relationship between the provinces and territories and the government of Canada, not to mention with First Nations, Inuit, and Métis communities and critical infrastructure owner operators is fundamentally different in Canada than it is in the United States. And so to assume that a command and control style organization, which is what I assume it would be in an emergency response capacity, could be simply created and implemented may not be as simple as it sounds.
Well, I know my reading list is now a little bit longer, so I hope you found that helpful. And do make sure to check out CGEM and the journals that Simon mentioned in our show notes. Yet another part of staying prepared in emergency management is attending conferences. Not only is it a professional development requirement for certifications such as the CEM, it's also an incredibly important opportunity to meet your peers in an environment that is not currently on fire. One such conference in 2023 was the Banff Disaster Forum, and I was lucky enough to not only attend, but catch up with the conference organizers Peter and Bruno for a bit of a conference debrief in case you missed it.
Yeah, thanks, Grayson. Well, we had the benefit of being able to speak to you ahead of the conference, and as your listeners may recall, Disaster Forum was a conference that had been going on for about 20 years and ended in 2018. And Trace Associates, where Bruno and I work, decided to sort of reboot that event in 2023. We held it in late October in Banff. The theme of it was really to bring people together, the notion of collaboration and how incredibly important it is in emergency crisis management and business continuity. So we did that. We were really blessed to have a sellout. We were over 120 people who attended from a wide range of Ontario, Northwest Territories, Alberta, some from BC, and a real range of sectors too. So industry, municipalities, and not-for-profits and a range of things. The real highlight to me was the bringing together, the coming together of people and just those opportunities to speak to one another. It was fantastic. But a couple speaker highlights. We had a really great keynote. We were really lucky to have Tom Sampson, the former chief of the Calgary Emergency Management Agency, and Susan Henry, the current chief of CEMA, speak about what they call the unspoken skills of emergency management. And that was really an informative and fun discussion about what it's like to have that kind of role in an organization of that prominence. And as a contrast to that, again, we had many really great speakers, but we had a gentleman named Jeff Bedom, who is of Métis heritage from Alberta Health Services, and he spoke about collaborative and co-developing evacuation centers before crisis strikes, and really about the notion of cultural resilience, and which, of course, relates to beyond Indigenous people, anybody of different cultures. And that was fascinating. And you could tell from the people in the room how much that resonated with them and is clearly a topic that we need to spend some time on in future conferences. I think Bruno has a couple thoughts of highlights from his perspective as well.
I think for myself, I did really enjoy John Larson. He was one of our final keynotes of the conference, and he really kind of tied everything together because we talked about leadership in crisis and specifically focused on Volkswagen and how they managed, you know, the whole crisis that they had. But that, I think that was actually a good kind of finish off to the actual conference. But as well, we had Catherine Severson, and she's the Director of Emergency and Protective Services for the town of Banff. And she really discussed something that's always very critical about how to move from emergency response into incident management and how actually ICS, the Incident Command System, actually gets used and should be used. And I thought, you know, that was very well done on her part. So I think those are two key ones. And in addition to that, I guess just one final one for me is basing yourself. You had a great presentation. It was great to hear everything that you've been doing, you know, with your podcast. And I think it was actually very, very, very well taken by everyone. Kind of showed, you know, everything that you've been doing. And I think it's a way to also connect everyone as well. So, you know, good job as well on your part.
Well, thanks, Bruno. And thanks for the opportunity to attend. I really do think it was a great conference at a great location. You can't go wrong with the beautiful, beautiful Banff. My three top quotes of the Banff Disaster Forum 2023, this one's from Tom, that the role of the emergency manager rarely imitates the job description. The next one is from Kath Severston. The transition from emergency response to incident management can feel for first responders like the incident is being stolen from them. So we need to be aware of that. And then this last one I found humorous. This is from Sue Henry. Getting an incident management team to stop working is like getting a five-year-old to go to bed. Sometimes you may need to make it in order. So thanks for the very quick summary. It was an amazing conference. What's happening in 2024?
Yeah, thanks, Grayson. Well, we certainly hope to keep the event going. We have plans to hold Disaster Forum 2024 in early November at the same location in Banff. Basically a three-day conference with some workshops on the very first day and then roughly a day and a half of sessions. But we definitely intend to keep the thrust of it the same. And those things really are, one is that we want people that attend to come away with something that they can tangibly, they have learned and can do. Clearly, our intent is as well to bring people together. So it's really a cross-sector or multi-sector type of approach we want to have. We want to have municipalities and industry and not-for-profits and various other organizations, because it's only those are really who the groups who end up working together in a real emergency or crisis. So we want to keep it that way.
Bruno and Peter, thanks very much. And I look forward to seeing you at the next Disaster Forum.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Well, the 2024 Disaster Forum is now officially scheduled for 4 to 6 November 2024, but there are also a lot of other great conferences coming up before that across Canada this year. One such conference is the Emergency Preparedness in Healthcare Conference. This is in Toronto on the 16th and 17th of May. There's still time to register, and it's a must-go for healthcare emergency management professionals, so I'll be there on that one. Next up, we have Bordering on Disaster. This is the second annual Bordering on Disaster, or BOD, conference, which is presented by Synovus Energy and located in Lloydminster on the 19th and 20th of September. That one should be a good one, and they did a great job last year. Right after that, on the 24th to 26th of September, in the Shaw Centre in Ottawa, Ontario, there is CEPCA, the Canadian Emergency Preparedness and Climate Adaptation Convention. I don't know much about this one, have never been before, because it is the first ever CEPCA convention, and it advertises as the most important emergency management event of the year. So stay tuned for that one. Over in Saskatoon, we have the SEPA Back to Basics Four Pillars of Emergency Management Conference, 21st to 24th October 2024, followed by the Ontario Disaster and Emergency Management Conference. This one has been going forever, and one of the longest running emergency management conferences in Canada is still one of the best. This is October 22nd and 23rd in the International Centre in Toronto. We will absolutely have Epic Podcast participants at that one. So if you didn't quite catch all of those, you can check out our Epic Disaster Calendar on our website, epicpodcast.ca, and click the links for each of these in our featured disaster management events section. But beyond conferences, there are also a ton of really amazing events coming up over Emergency Preparedness Week, including from our partners at CRHNet, who are putting on an Emergency Preparedness for Everyone Accessibility Considerations webinar on May 7th, a Putting the Sendai Framework into Practice, Examples from Canadian Communities on May 9th, and are facilitating a Communicating with the Deaf in Emergency Situations starting June 5th, which I have signed up for, so hope to see you there. In addition, the Institute for Catastrophic Loss Reduction is hosting their 2024 Canadian Wildfire Season Forecast with Richard Carr on May 7th. This is another free preparedness event. And Canadian Wildfire is putting on an interesting webinar on May 10th called Exploring Fatigue in Wildland Firefighters, Understanding the Links Between Sleep, Shift Work, Stress, and Brain Function. So as you can see, Emergency Preparedness Week is going to be filled with educational opportunities. And if I may make a bit of a shameless plug for another event I host called Disaster Rounds, we have four educational events coming up. The first one is happening May 6th. It's called Crossover Conditions, the Intersection of Wildfire and Healthcare Facilities. The next one is May 9th, and it's entitled Learning from a Residential House Explosion Mass Casualty Incident. And then for Business Continuity Week, we have one called Coming Home After Disaster, Environmental Public Health Considerations in Reentry Planning, and that's on May 14th. And the final one is called The System is Down, Lessons from a Provincial Healthcare Network Outage on May 15th. All of these are free, and all of them are at noon Mountain Standard Time, and you can find all of them at togetherforhealth.albertahealthservices.ca/disaster rounds, and we'll put that link in our show notes as well. And on top of all of that, Epic Podcast has finally broken through the podcaster's block, and we'll be bringing you five new podcasts over the next 5 days for your listening pleasure. I know, it's an EP week miracle. So I hope you found that helpful. I hope some of these learning opportunities strike your interest. Please do look into them. Please sign up, and we hope to see you there. And that's all for this episode of Epic Podcast. A big thanks to Tarina, Simon, Peter, and Bruno for coming on the show, and to all of the hardworking emergency managers out there who, on top of prepping for the dreaded 2024 hazard season, have found the time to put together important activities and awareness sessions for Emergency Preparedness Week. Thanks for listening, and if we missed any upcoming EP Week events or conferences, email me at team@epicpodcast.ca and we'd be happy to share them. Happy Emergency Preparedness Week!
You've been listening to Epic Podcast, a product of Emergency Preparedness in Canada, Inc.
As always, Epic Podcasts are designed as a supplementary educational tool for the emergency management professional on the go. The views and opinions explored during this podcast do not necessarily represent the agencies or organizations that we or our guests may belong to.
For more information about the show or the people on it, visit our website at epicpodcast.ca, connect with us on LinkedIn, or follow us on Twitter at username epic_podcast.
Stay tuned for more on the next episode of Epic Podcast, current, relevant, Canadian.